cliffcentral.com.
Get out right here, man. Shit, I'm saying. Get out here for real. I'm saying get out here for real.
Halala, my preacher, halala. Halala, limbobo, halala. Halala, Gauteng, halala. Halala, KwaZulu-Natal, halala. Halala, Western Cape, halala.
Yes, 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 yes. Good morning. Are we having a happy day so far? Not. Hello, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning, Gareth. Hello.
Yeah, I've got to publicly... testing. 1, 2, 3. There you go. I've got to publicly thank Ben and my buddy and the team for standing in and looking after things while I was away. I am happy to be back. And even though today, for many people, is not a working day, and you should be ashamed if you ask me. You should be ashamed if you're not at work today. I mean, I understand schools are closed, so, you know, if you're a teacher, you don't have to be ashamed. But anybody else, today's not a public holiday, okay? People have got things to do.
No, it's just Monday.
Yeah, but well, I don't mean to launch into this straight away because we've got so much to catch up on. Good morning, Sia Sangweni. How are you?
Morning, how are you?
I'm good, man. Nice to see you. Where were you in Cape Town?
No, I have such a stupid excuse for this Monday morning.
What happened?
I had to lather and moisturize.
Yeah, yeah, we know you do that.
Sure, see it.
Well, no, can I tell you? Okay.
You're looking fat. You're looking radiant.
No, folks, can I actually tell you the sad case of affairs? So, since we're already lamenting about this wonderful week we're having, yeah. I just found out I'm potentially allergic to either gin or whiskey.
Uh-oh.
Beautiful.
When did you discover this?
So, I had... quite
you had a breakout?
No, I had quite a lot of gin and whiskey last
What, last
week.
Night?
Last week.
Oh, okay.
And then I woke up on like Friday and I was kind of feeling itchy. Mm-hmm. I was like, I wonder what's going on, but didn't really mind it. Then like Saturday, I have full on breakout.
What, like a rash?
Oh, yeah, like hives.
Oh, Jesus.
Red splash.
From gin and whiskey?
I have no cooking clue why.
So hang on a second. So in the same night, you were having gin and then you would have a whiskey, then you would have a gin.
What? Then a whiskey. The drinks were freely what are you flowing, at? So I have no...
Listen, first of all, that's very amateurish. If someone is smart as you, I'm very disappointed. To mix whiskey and gin, they don't go together in anything.
I never, ever, ever drink either. So the fact that they were there, I was like, sure, let me just have some of that and some of this as well.
All right.
That became a thing. But yeah, now I had to go to the doctor, found out I have hives because of this. And literally, he couldn't actually diagnose where or what it came from.
All right, well, you've got to do an experiment now. You've got to test yourself out. You've got to take a shot of gin. And then you've got to take a shot of whiskey.
But folks...
And you've got to see what happens. You got to zero in on the problem, yeah, right?
So you've got to sort this out. So tonight, you're going to drink whiskey.
Yeah.
And that's my homework.
And then you're going to give it a couple of days. And then Wednesday or Thursday, you get stuck into the gin.
But this is what I don't understand. We can send people to the moon, but we can't be able to diagnose this. Because literally, my doctor now has given me some soap, given me some like body lotion.
He just told you what to do.
Yeah, we'll help you. Yeah. Forget your doctor. Your doctor's a moron. I can tell you right now. Who is this? Dr. Higosami of the Institute of Spiritual Healing?
Doctor leaves me glistening at 6 in the morning.
So you now have to put on this cream as well, in addition to your usual routine, which is a very long one.
But now I can't use anything, so I probably smell like a hippie as well. Because I'm like, what if it's
no,
like
the
cologne I use?
You are always immaculately turned out. I don't think you have to worry about that.
Yeah,
plus, you bathe and shower more than any human being on Earth.
What if it all compounded now? So I'm literally so scared to use anything.
Okay,
see,
there's a certain element we haven't touched on here. If you're drinking whiskey and gin in the same night, you could be getting very hammered. What else did you do? Because sometimes it's like, oh, my drink was spiked. No, you just had 75 drinks.
Yeah, you were a slut. I'm not saying you, but that's what usually happens. You meet a lot of sluts.
I'm
not talking about you. I've met a lot of sluts who'll say to me, oh, last night my drink was spiked. And you say to her, no, honey, I saw you hitting the shots at the bar. No one's spiking your drink.
Yeah, you were just getting drunk on an empty stomach. There's a big difference.
No.
So, Sia, we've got to figure out whether it's the gin or the whiskey, and we can sort this out. It's very easy. You need antihistamine.
Yes.
Right? Have you got that?
Some of that. Uh-huh.
And that's helped. You don't look like you're full of hives today.
No.
Or what, are they hidden under your shirt?
Yeah. It's like, and that's the thing. It's like in all these weird arbitrary places. Like, why do I need to have this little spot on my back that I can't even scratch? So I've had my sister had to prove her love to me by scratching my
That's
back.
A lot of love.
And you didn't hang out with Limpompo, that guy?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Limpompo, who lives in the block, right?
That story got very cold very quickly.
No, we aren't interested in him at all.
Okay. Well, what happened? Did you catch him doing something revolting?
Well, I saw like a certain other little blonde-haired situation walking up the stairs with him.
A blonde-haired situation?
Well, no, he was like Chris Brown circa his meltdown. So it's just this dude who just died.
All right, but this guy, this Limpopo guy, he's gay.
Yeah.
All right. And he took some skeberish up with him.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're just put off now. You're like, I'm not going to be another page in your diary.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Right.
But I just love that he still likes everything I post on social media.
Good for you.
Yeah, well, let's see.
Anybody have anything eventful or exciting happen over the weekend?
Yeah, something more promising.
I did lots of running. I haven't done this in so long. Well, I was looking after a big dog, right? And for, you know, like a dog's life, it's all they want to do is eat and run and go outside the house. So every single day I would feed the dog and then it would guilt me. It's like a big brown Labrador. Mm-hmm. It would guilt me with these side eyes.
And wants you to run with it.
I had to take it running. So I ran along the green belt of Parkhurst area.
Yeah.
And I feel stuffed now. I really do. Because you're running and you're dodging shits. You're dodging cyclists.
Yeah.
You're dodging horses. Mate,
and you have to. And it's horses. Johannesburg. Yes. That's Johannesburg. You could be robbed as well. So you've got to really be on your.
Yeah. And then you're running under power lines. Like, I just feel like sore today. Yeah. Like
horses, robbers, power lines. Got it.
Yeah. And then people even like pushing their kids in prams. It's like one of those forced participation areas. Everyone's like, got to do something. What if they're just staying inside your house and being antisocial?
Speaking of all that stuff, when I was in America, I ate like a pig.
Really?
Just ate.
That's a given though, right? Because every time you come back, you say that.
Yeah, but I mean, really, I don't know that it's peer pressure. The food is good.
Yeah.
You got a variety of food. I mean, there was this one restaurant we went to. It's called the Iron Cactus. I put a video up of they make fresh guacamole.
Uh-huh.
Your updates are very good, by the way.
Thank you. I tried really hard. I'm trying to up my game there. You know, multimedia and all the rest of it. They make this fresh guacamole at your table. They take a big iron dish and they put like 4 or 5 avos in there and they mash them up. Yeah. They put in a little chopped up tomato, some onions, some coriander, some spices or something.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's just the best thing ever. But then for a while, you're dipping nachos into the guacamole and then you get this whole arrangement of Mexican food. It's amazing. Like a strip steak, you know? Ooh. And that with the corn, it's just an amazing, you don't get Mexican food like that here, as far as I know. There might be one or two places I haven't been to yet.
Yeah.
But I mean, wow, what a place.
It's like you just want someone in your kitchen making you that.
That's all I want. Because the food is not, that's not food that's bad for you. You know, avos and steak and corn and that kind of thing. You can't really get fat on that stuff. But then you throw in that, like the ribs and the meat that you get at this other ridiculous restaurant. And you just look at how many times in a day you eat if you're going to these conventions. And it's, you know, you eat 3 full meals a day. It's unnecessary.
Way more than what you used to.
I would never do that at home.
Yeah.
So I've just got to get back in the gym and I've got to just eat right from here on in. So I went and did some grocery shopping over the weekend and I bought like a Spartan. I bought things that, all fresh produce.
That's okay.
Right, and nothing that is bad for you, nothing that is sweet, nothing that is unnecessary. It was so expensive to buy all this fresh produce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easier to be fat and eat bad food. It's cheaper.
Pretty much.
Right.
It really is. And that's why it's the default for so many people. So I can spend 100 rand and just get things done, or I can spend 170 rand plus put more effort into making something. It's like,
I mean, I bought oranges and I bought apples and I bought my God, avocado is expensive.
And wasn't it anticlimactic after visiting the Iron Cactus?
Well, exactly.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I tried.
So anyway, lots to talk about this morning, and lots of stuff to get into news-wise, which we will do. Mubs is not in today, and we're not here tomorrow because it is a public holiday. But really, those people who are not with us this morning, people who are not working today, we're ashamed to share this country with you. There are people who have things to do, and you're sitting at home? Outrageous.
Well, maybe they're sitting somewhere else because, you know, long weekends, so you take time off. You make like a 5-day out of it, then that's okay.
Listen, I thought that instead of me talking about all the stuff I got up to, you ask me some questions. We'll mess around with that later on. I watched a couple of really good movies on the plane on the way there and back.
Yeah, how was all that travel? Because of what, 30-plus hours?
Yeah, I can tell you now because I took note of this stuff. Oh, it's insane. No. The amount of travel is just crazy. Like I spent, I think it was like 3 full days. And nights on airplanes. Yeah, the first trip was 37 hours, 45 minutes. And the return was 33 hours, 55 minutes. That's including layovers in New York and Dubai. Jeez. But what was cool, I mean, listen, I got to say, Emirates is amazing. I mean,
yeah, it is the best economy seat, I reckon.
They're not paying me for any advertising here. We bought the ticket fair and square, but they're a great airline. What a professional operation they run. So that was very cool. I watched a movie. I saw the ad for this a while ago, and I didn't know it was out already. You know Natalie Portman?
Yes.
She plays Jackie Kennedy in a movie called Jackie. Now, it's not the kind of movie I would normally watch because, I mean, I'm only interested in the history, and I don't really care about, you know... Jackie Kennedy's fashion or any of that stuff. And this was the kind of movie that a lot of those publications are talking about. So I thought, I'm on the plane. What else have I got to do? Mm-hmm. What a great movie. I have to commend the people who put this together. First of all, Natalie Portman is so convincing as Jackie Kennedy that afterwards I found myself Googling pictures of Jackie Kennedy and like comparing them. I mean, look, Natalie Portman's way, way more attractive than Jackie Kennedy was. Let's not mess around. Jackie Kennedy always dressed very well.
Yes.
For a woman in the 60s, she had an interesting hairstyle and all the rest of it. And she wore those, what did they call them? A pillbox hat. She wore a pillbox hat.
Was she the first lady to remake a glamorous thing?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you could say Eleanor Roosevelt, F.D. Roosevelt's wife, was a real go-getter. She was a very powerful woman. She did a lot for the emancipation of women in America. She did a lot for minorities in America. She did a lot for education in America. So Eleanor Roosevelt was like an activist first lady. And Jackie Kennedy came along. She was the youngest first lady. He was the youngest president. Oh. Ever. And the two of them they turned that White House into something glamorous. I mean, they used to call it Camelot, you know? And they go through the whole assassination. Basically, the story of the movie, and I won't ruin anything for you here, but the story of the movie is that a journalist comes to interview Jackie a few days after the assassination. Mm-hmm. Could even be a month or so after. And she tells him the whole story from her point of view. And it, as far as I can tell, it's based on the actual transcripts that this journalist wrote down in that interview about things that we don't know. Like when she and Robert Kennedy, Bobby, went out to find a place for the grave in Arlington Cemetery. About how she describes in detail what happened in Dallas at the time of the assassination, and how she like was picking up a piece of his skull and holding his brains in and stuff because it was like he was dead already and he had a very faint pulse, but he was dead. You know, there was just nothing. There's no way you could put that back together again. And the story with the kids and kind of all the stuff that you might want to know about what happens in that situation. Mm-hmm. And this was the president of the United States who was assassinated. It was no small deal. I mean, it's still something that people talk about everywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody I've met who's not completely ignorant doesn't know John F. Kennedy. Oh, he was shot in Dallas, 1963. Yeah.
Lee Harvey Oswald is one of the most famous names of like would-be criminals, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you may believe he was not the lone gunman that he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Apparently, conspiracy theories on the Kennedy assassination are on the decline. People are less likely to believe it was a conspiracy now than they were 40 years ago. So it's an interesting thing to think.
I wonder what that's based on.
I don't know.
Or was it just time moving on and people...
Maybe people just...
care less.
Yeah, they just don't care anymore. Or they care not as much as they used to then. But this story is just so beautifully told, and they go to a lot of trouble to show, listen, Jackie Kennedy comes across as being a bit ditzy some of the time, but you got to remember that's how women were in those days. It's how women were expected to be. You know, they would talk like this, and they wouldn't have opinions about things, because if they had opinions, people would think that they were rowdy women.
Yeah.
Dangerous women. Weren't allowed to have opinions. So she talks a bit weird and
it's hard to figure out. But wasn't she also a bit of a recluse?
Well, certainly after the assassination. I mean, she went off and married Aristotle Onassis because she really needed a lot of money. And he was a millionaire. Billionaire, I think, at the time.
Yeah, she was quite the trophy wife because the story that came with her.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can imagine. There were so many men who wanted to be with Jackie Kennedy after that because she was the former first lady, most famous first lady in the world. And a woman of, you know, she was always very dignified. Mm-hmm. She was kind of like the Queen of America for a while. So there was massive acclaim. And as Ben says, she would have been the perfect trophy wife for any, you know, big businessman.
Nouveau riche coming right up, third world.
Right. And Onassis with all his shipping money. It was a match made in heaven. It turned out not to be so good because they'd get divorced. And there were always big problems with Jackie and Onassis's kids, as far as I can remember. But, you know, she ultimately went off and lived very quietly as a recluse in New York. And remember when she died, it was, I think, the mid-2000s? No, probably the mid-90s. She died and America just fell in a heap. I mean, they hadn't seen her for a couple of years because she was so reclusive, but they just fell in a heap. I just found the whole story fascinating.
Was JFK the only sitting president to be assassinated?
No, there were two others, I think. There was Lincoln, and there was Andrew Jackson, maybe? I can't remember.
Who's Andrew Jackson? Never heard of this guy.
No, he's a long time ago.
Andrew Jackson?
Yeah, there was a long time ago. He was a black man.
Was he?
No, I'm just testing you.
I was about to say, maybe not.
But you know, was there a reason behind these assassinations, or was it just because of like timing? They're just like, well, we're going to kill the president. I mean, was Jackson just really bad, or was he dangerous to some people?
Jackson, I don't remember. I don't know the whole story.
He dodged an assassination attempt.
Okay, then it wasn't him. But I'll tell you, okay, the actual ones assassinated, according to this list, we've got Abraham Lincoln. Everybody knows what happened to him. He was at the theater. He was watching a play, and a guy came up behind him in the booth that he was sitting in and shot him in the head. Right?
Okay, yes.
Then there was, according to the list I've got in front of me now, James Garfield. Now, I don't remember. I don't think I know a huge amount about this guy.
Also don't know.
But apparently he was assassinated in Washington, D.C., less than 4 months after he took office. He got shot once in his right arm and once in his back as the president was arriving at the Baltimore and Potomac railroad station.
Oh, man.
Okay, so he didn't die immediately, but he died 11 weeks later of complications caused by infection. How do you like that?
Back in those days, that was like the Khaleesi's husband. He got a slight flesh wound.
Yeah, right.
Infection got him.
And then William McKinley. I didn't know. This was 1901. He was shot twice in the abdomen at close range by an anarchist.
He's bloody anarchist.
And what seemed to be a bandage, first bullet ricocheted either off a button or an award medal on his jacket. He died 7 days later on September 14, 1901. Wow, so there were four presidents assassinated. I thought it was only three. Jackson, there was an attempt on the following ones. Andrew Jackson, William Taft, Theodore Roosevelt, Herbert Hoover, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton.
Yeah, isn't it safe to say all of them?
Yeah, everyone since.
Everyone
since.
An assassination plot.
And then they rumored there are two assassinations that they were rumored to be assassinations, but they can't prove it. And that's Zachary Taylor. He was also somewhere in the first 10. And Warren Harding, who was just before the 1900s.
I swear, I never heard of some of these presidents now.
Yeah.
A Taft? President Taft.
Yeah, William Howard Taft.
Taft. Sounds like a hat. Yeah. Where's your Taft? Go out there like your Taft.
But I do, you know, I love these history, you know. I love these stories about moments and really important moments in human history and particularly in, you know, high places and people who've done important and impressive things. And so it was interesting to have the story of Jackie Kennedy, because it's always been the story of John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. And this was really her telling her story. And obviously it's now, you know, good 25 years after she died.
Since 1994, my maths is bad, but yeah, somewhere carry the one and minus the four. Yeah.
Yeah. And the point being really that, I mean, her kids, Caroline is the only one still alive. They're saying that she might be the perfect candidate for the Democrats come the next election. She's been ambassador to Japan most recently under Obama. And she's also quite quiet and reclusive and gets on with her thing. And her brother obviously died in that plane accident.
Well, yeah, because I was thinking about this. You know, in the previous elections, this was around the time when Obama started to rise. You know, and you started to know, like, okay, cool, in a couple of years' time.
Really?
Bye-bye, George Bush. And, you know, he was the senator of Chicago then.
I didn't start really taking notice of him until he and Hillary started running up against each other.
Really? Like, yeah. Right before the elections?
Yeah, I didn't know a lot about him before then.
Because he did, he was at the Democratic Convention, and right. That's when, you know, he made his mark. But right now, it's like, who are the likely successors? There's like no potential candidate out there.
George Clooney. I mean, he's been there the whole time.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He just needs to be given his own lane.
George, you reckon George Clooney could run for office?
Well, why do you think he married that Amal?
Yeah, she's smart.
I mean, come on. He had the pick of whatever woman he fancied in Lake Como, wherever else he was walking around in boat shoes. And he's like, no, I want to become a president, therefore I must get a first lady. And that's why he got married. That's the true story. Well, not really, but it's
Amal would
it's,
be
it's a story.
Can I ask you what the hell happened with Helen Ziller?
Sure, we went into this on Friday.
What happened? I'm out of the loop here. I didn't want to find out before I got back on the show. Okay. I wanted to find out when, you know, you guys tell me.
There was a series of tweets that she released last week, basically talking about how she was in Singapore recently, and she was drawing some parallels between how Singapore's dealt with colonialism and how Africa's dealt with colonialism, and how colonialism has left some really good things that we can build upon as nations, like blah, blah, blah. Basically saying that if it wasn't for colonialism, we wouldn't have things like the justice system, infrastructure, running water, blah, blah, healthcare, those kind of things.
Right.
So it was a series of tweets, but obviously everything was taken out of context. Look, I'm not saying what's... She had an interesting argument, but Twitter was not the place for this at all, as you can imagine.
No.
So one tweet in particular got ripped to shreds, and now she's just a racist, and no matter what the DA tweets over the weekend. Sake. So over the weekend, the DA tweeted that Butterbeer Dlamini must be fired. Every single response basically came, how about you fire Helen Ziller first? Don't tell ANC what to do. Fire Ziller. So there's all this heat about they must now, the DA must now get rid of Helen Ziller because she's an old white granny racist.
Okay, but Helen Ziller is not a racist, first of all. I mean, this is the woman who broke the news about what happened to Steve Biko. This is a woman who spent her entire life. I read her book and interviewed her last year.
Mm-hmm.
This is a woman who's... I could not be half the human being this person is when she went out of her way to stand up for non-racialism. I think people... you know what? People don't want to... They don't want to think about this stuff too much. They want to jump to conclusions because it's easy.
Of course.
We want to have a bad guy and we want to have a good guy. And we just want to imagine that our vision would be the perfect vision for creating a perfect society. I mean, what kind of a country do you think we would live in if there hadn't been? Let's just imagine the kind of world that South Africa would have been a part of if it had never been discovered by Jan van Riebeek and Vasco da Gama and all of that stuff. And let's not say it's going to be paradise, and let's not say it's going to be hell, because it's going to be somewhere in between. But there certainly wouldn't be the roads and the water and the electricity and the stuff that we've got since, you know, the time those things were invented and implemented here. So are we going to be closed-minded about this fact because it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about and because there wasn't a huge amount of development going on before that happened? Are we going to address it like adults, or are we going to immediately get upset? What would you prefer to do?
Well, obviously, the argument on top of that goes, there's many people in this country who still don't benefit from healthcare, roads, running water.
Sure, but that is kind of thing. That is the government's fault, fair and square.
But that's an inconvenient truth, Gareth. It's but way more convenient to call Helen Zille a racist.
Listen, I can tell you a lot of things. Helen Zille is a bizarre person in many ways. I mean, you know, she's not perfect, and she's done a lot of things that I've thought were strange. And even reading her book, there's a kind of a principle and a purity to the way she thinks about things that I can't connect with. She's a hard line. Like, she's principled. This is a woman who, and I think you've got to be able to bend principles sometimes, because there's reality, there's pragmatism.
Is this like in every area of her life, or
like
just the way she is?
You got to read the book. I can't tell you, like, I'll bet you any amount of money, anyone who's called her a racist has not read her book or any other long book.
Any
other long book. I can assure you that they didn't read Long Walk to Freedom. I can assure you that the people who are calling, anybody who calls anyone else a racist just because, is probably not reading a lot. It's a very, very puerile thing to do. What you do is you shut down the discussion. Now, do you want to have a meaningful discussion about this stuff, or do you want to shut people down? Because if you want to shut people down, call them a racist. If you want to engage with them meaningfully, talk to them. Now, do you know what a racist looks like? We all know what racists look like. Have you been to the Apartheid Museum?
Yeah, everyone must do that.
I mean, they'll give you some perspective.
That is such an experience to go and walk through that place. It's eerie, but it's so good for you.
Ask poor old sick Ahmed Kathrada, who's in hospital at the moment. Ask him about the kind of treatment that he had under apartheid. Ask the people who grew up, your grandmothers, your grandfathers. Ask them what real racists look like and what they sound like and what they do. And there's plenty of examples of these people. It's not hard to find. And if you're going to scratch at Helen Zille until you eventually find something wrong with her, well, you know, if you do that with anyone, you're going to find something wrong with them.
Sure.
I mean, for God's sake, you look at our president. You don't have to scratch. He's a festering wound available to all to see the pustulence. I mean, this is the guy in charge of the country. And you're going to have a go at her? Someone who's... She has devoted her life to no less of a struggle than Jacob Zuma has. I wouldn't do that. Would you do that?
No.
Hell no.
Not to the extent that she did.
Not a chance. So, are we going to go call her a racist? It's such a cop-out. Like, you're not prepared to do the heavy lifting.
So, our only thing was, you know, given her history, she must have at least spared 3 seconds to go, you know, saying something like this on Twitter is not going to get the best response.
Yeah, well,
there,
I used to participate on Twitter
not
quite
the best
a lot.
Platform.
No, I agree. Twitter is just a horrible place now. It's not the kind of place you should be engaging in serious conversation or points of view, because it's just a cesspool.
Yeah.
There's nothing valuable on Twitter to be contributed to the meaningful discussions that will take our country forward. Nothing. It is a mass of bitter, angry, twisted people who've just discovered a place where they can be heard, and they are trumpeting their bullshit from the hilltops. You don't need to be a part of this. You don't need to participate. Make your life better. Get off social media. Honest to God. And I said...
I like that.
Do you know...
Make your life better. Get off social media.
Really? I remember I said to you on the phone the other day, I want to get off of Facebook.
Yep.
Oh,
you did.
Personal
Facebook.
I'm going to cancel my personal Facebook somewhere in the next 2-3 months, because I've got to figure out a way of, you know, sifting through. Either there's a way that I can just chop out a whole lot of noise that I don't want to hear anymore, or else, and make it work for me, because I'm not posting private stuff there anyway. But I don't like Mark Zuckerberg knowing all this stuff about me. Nobody should. He is a very creepy human being, that Mark Zuckerberg. He is a very dangerous creature.
It's actually a good point. Like, I look at it now, and ever since Instagram became a big deal, like, I've lost all interest in Facebook. I mean, obviously because I have a website, I use it for business purposes only.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I ever had a status update or I actually really cared about something. You don't need to.
I use it for birthdays.
Yeah, birthdays are great.
Birthdays are good. That's a nice way to remember people's birthdays. And sometimes you don't remember who the hell they are. So it's good that there's a picture. You know what I mean.
But that's my test. If your birthday pops up and I can't remember who you are,
you can.
Then we aren't really friends. Right. Yeah.
No, that's good. All right, listen, we could talk about this stuff all morning, and we will, but we've got to get into some things. There's some news, there's some sport, there's some money matters with Anthea, so I hope you're ready. What should we start with, the news?
Yeah, start with the news. All
right, Let me get some news going here. The news is brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. Let me tell you about them. They are the best when it comes to pizzas and pastas and salads, established in 1992. At the foreshore in Cape Town, fiery passion to create only the finest gourmet Italian-inspired meals. After 24 years, their name has become synonymous throughout South Africa with Italian-inspired artisanal food, including a broad range of crisp, thin-based pizzas and a wide variety of freshly prepared salads and pastas. Colcacchio Pizzeria, they are the reason you crave pizza. Let's get into some news. Ben, what do you have for us this morning?
Well, Gareth, obviously the death of Joe Mafela was the sort of big story of the weekend. Unfortunately, he died in a car accident. It's been revealed here in Johannesburg.
Yeah, Joe Mafela was he was just one of the great actors in South African theatre and South African television. Everybody knew his face,
definitely,
right?
Legendary status.
Yeah, I mean, his showbiz credentials are fantastic. And, you know, he even went to the point of getting into advertising, and he created that Chicken Licken jingle, which will...
It's good, 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 is good, is
exactly. Nice. I mean, that lives on the lives of everybody around here. It really is. So heartfelt commiserations coming in from all parts. And
yeah, I think a lot of people...
Throughout Twitter on the weekend.
And it's sad that he had to die in a car accident. That's just such a nasty way to go. I mean, do we know any details of how it happened?
Well, it was on the highway here in Johannesburg between Oxford and Howson Road.
So the M1 North.
Yeah, M1 North. His Ford Figo was involved in a collision with a Bucky. And that's how he went. Very sad. Well,
I'm sorry. Rest in peace, Joe Mafela. Horrible.
Yeah, and it's so crazy how it was the same night as the SAFTAs, the South African Film and Television Awards. No, yeah, you just understand how things can change in literally like a blink of an eye. So, man.
You got to be careful in those cars.
75 years old, though.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, very, very,
very sad. All right.
Obviously, last week, the Constitutional Court was very nice and busy. And,
were they busy? That justice, Mogoeng Mogoeng. First of all, I heard they robbed his offices.
Yeah, that happened at the weekend. So quite suspiciously, his offices robbed. 16 computers, I think it was, were taken from the Human Resources Department of the Chief Justice's office. Sorry, 15 computers in Midrand. So now all kinds of people are coming forward and saying, well, the timing's a little bit too coincidental. This isn't just a theft, right? People wouldn't just randomly come across the offices and go, oh, cool, 15 laptops, let's take them.
I drove past those offices this morning, as I do every day on my way in, and it's kind of isolated. It's not like it's near a whole lot of other buildings. It sort of sits on its own. It's next to the highway. This is a planned thing.
Oh,
there's something very nefarious going on.
Without a doubt.
This is dodgy as hell.
And as many people were saying, this is a national key point, really. Why is the security not way better than this? What's going on here?
The big worry is that there's information on all those computers about all the judges, the 250-odd judges in South Africa. All of their personal info is on there, their bank account details, their ID numbers, all the personal information that you would need to run an effective HR department, right?
Yep, exactly.
Very suspicious.
Now, Jackson Mutembu came on, got his Twitter over the weekend and says, I agree with my ANC. Those responsible must be found, their motives uncovered, and the might of our criminal justice system thrown at them. Obviously, in response to this burglary.
Yeah.
And you should see the responses. Everybody just comes out and says, oh, whatever. You know exactly who did this. Chat to Devin Klobo about this. He knows. People are just so upset about this.
It's very suspicious.
It is so hugely suspicious because, you know, in the last few weeks, obviously Justice Malala touched on this, the last few burning platforms, is that here we get a president who's talking about a funny justice system, him and his cronies. They're trying to undermine this whole system at any chance they can. And now a robbery like this after...
Yeah, this guy is so... This president of ours is so rotten. I don't know what to say. I mean, it seems to... And he's just laughing. He goes to Parliament. Yeah. This whole Sasa thing. He says there's no problem. And then he appoints himself the chair of the interministerial committee to sort it out. So 3 days before... There was no problem. Mm. Now he's the chair and he'll sort it out. Like, there's a problem. I'll help sort it out.
Because his track record is amazing. Yeah.
You've done so much good. You know what? Rather don't.
Just stay out of this one.
Stay away. Let's let those grannies and those poor people in the rural parts of South Africa who have nothing else to live for except a small social grant, let's at least let them have their money, please.
Yes. Thank you for your offer.
Yeah, thanks,
very
Mr.
Kind
President.
Of you.
But this is one place we don't need your grubby little paws, if you don't mind. Really? This guy.
Well, from bad to... It's always difficult to say from bad to worse, because let's be honest, worse is pretty close. The SABC's financials.
Oh, yeah? How did those come out? How are those looking?
Wow. Okay, so now it's, as people are saying, Cloudy's chickens have come home to roost here, because there 2008, the massive financial collapse around the world. Well, it's now worse than 2008. Cloudy is worse than the latest global meltdown financially. For the SABC.
How little money do they have? What have they got?
Gareth, they're not mentioning numbers here. But
they are worse than the economic depression of 2008.
The global economic depression. Cloudy single-handedly seems to have trumped it.
Right now.
So what they're saying, Gareth, is that they're in such financial doo-doo right now that there is no new programming being commissioned whatsoever. Nothing at all. They are literally running on fumes, and many are believed that, salaries are not going to get paid. It's got to this point where, I mean, the whispers in the corridors of the SABC.
You know what? They deserve to go out of business.
Are saying this is looking bad.
The whole lot of them. They should shut down those stupid radio stations. They have no audience. They should shut down those TV channels with those crappy programs on them. Nobody wants the SABC. Nobody. Nobody. Shut it down. Sell it to the highest bidder. Yeah, let private business come in. Let someone who's got deep pockets fund a brand new broadcaster. And forget about the idea of having a public broadcaster. It's not going to happen. We can't administer public business.
That is so crazy.
We can't do it. There just is not one person. Listen to this. We've got the social grants crisis, right? We've got Transnet, which is a disaster. We've got Eskom, which is a disaster. We've got the SABC, which is a disaster. Every time we take a state enterprise under this administration and we try to make it work, it goes the opposite way. It's a disaster. So forget about it. Public enterprise, there's no such thing. None of these people can run at a profit. None of them seem to know what they're doing. They're all rotten. I mean, I left out SANRAL. Yep. You name them. There isn't one of these, not one single state enterprise that's being run properly. So give up. Realize when you're beaten, guys. Well, you can't do it. You have taken businesses that should generate money for government, and you've turned them into losses. SAA, I left that one out too. Do you want to go through any more? I mean, it's embarrassing. You list the failure upon failure upon failure upon failure. What this tells you is that this administration are the biggest bunch of incompetent losers that have ever walked the earth on 2 feet, because some people would say they probably can't even do that effectively.
Yeah, that's really so sad. So if you're working in the SABCs, like, people have been pushing for promotions for the last few years. Turns out the positions they're going for have been frozen or do not exist anymore. And now it's just, there's grievances and all kinds of things. But yet people at the top are still getting decent salaries. When I say people at the top, if you're friends with Faith Mutambi,
sure,
you're in. You're still making good cash. The SACP, we all know who they are, right?
The South African Communist Party.
I still don't get that in a democratic society. But anyway, that's not for me to
all right.
bitch over. They're putting down an ultimatum to President Zuma, which is quite interesting, really. During a bilateral meeting over the weekend, they said that the president's got two options. Revoke the Gupta citizenship, kick Molefe out of parliament, and investigate Sasa. Or basically, SACP are going to up the ante and telling him to step down.
Well, I mean, haven't they been saying that already?
But that's my question. Are these guys relevant still in the mix of hierarchy is right now in SA? Is this ultimatum going to bring anything about?
No.
Well, relevant, no. Are they still persistent and we got to praise them for that? Yes.
Yeah, shame. At least they try.
Yeah, you see, when you have to put shame in someone's efforts.
Ooh, shame.
It's just sad.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much all the sort of big news stories. We'll get more in the second hour.
All right, there's lots to talk about there, but let's get into some sport.
And there will be some lighter stories. That's just basically what's hitting the cutting room right now.
All right, it's time for Ben and some sport. Go, take it away, Ben.
Massive weekend of rugby, and unfortunately for England, their dream run has come to an end. So there were 18 wins in a row, right? Under Eddie Jones, they were just rolling everybody. They equaled the All Blacks record, but then, exactly like the All Blacks, they had to play these bloody Irish. Now, the Ireland have been crap this year, right? They lost to Scotland, they lost to Wales. Johnny Sexton's up and down always because he's made out of glass. But then, in the spirit of the performance on St. Patrick's Day, I mean, the English could not be any more unlucky. You know, he's gone about the luck of the Irish. Mm-hmm. Playing at home on St. Patrick's Day, and they just had the game that they needed to beat England. They stifled it in all areas, eventually winning 13-9. And it started pissing down in the second half as well. England could not mount a comeback. Their normally explosive bench was nullified by the Irish. And that was it. So 18 is still the record for most consecutive wins by a Tier 1 nation held by both England and New Zealand. In other news from the Six Nations, of course, England won it last the round before this, so these games were just sort of, you know, academic, really. Scotland beat Italy 29-0. And then in probably the longest game of rugby of all time, France beat Wales 20 points to 18. Now, Wales were winning 18-13, right, at the end of the game, 80 minutes. They got a guy, Sinbind. The Sinbin guy came back on and still played because the match eventually ended on 100 minutes. 100 minutes. And if you counted the time from kickoff to final whistle, 128 minutes was played.
That's insane.
Bear in mind, rugby's an 80-minute game, right?
Yeah, that's insane.
But Wayne Barnes, who looks like Tintin.
It's almost a third half.
Exactly. So it got to 80 minutes and the Welsh were ahead, but the French were just all over them, really. And time after time, Wayne Barnes sort of, he refrained from giving the penalty try right in the, by the goalpost to end the match. He wanted it to kind of end in a different way. Well, 100 minutes later, but then it became an absolute disaster because people were coming on and off. Then a Welsh guy got bitten in the arm, allegedly. He had bite marks and they were like, well, you've got to investigate this. So more time was taken. This French crowd eventually was just getting so irate with everything. And they won. But again, it meant nothing because it was all about Ireland versus England, which had to start later as a result. In Super Rugby, some really good results for, well, the Lions were impressive. They beat the Reds 44-14. Quay Cooper was given a red card early in the second half. So that became a bit of an issue for them. So I think it was still in the first half. And then the Jaguars, they were fantastic over the Cheetahs, winning 41-14. Other big winners from the weekend, the Crusaders let it late again. So they're 4 out of 4. They're unbeaten, but some of those matches could easily have gone the other way. Going good against the Blues this weekend, 33-24. The Chiefs playing a sort of weakened side against the weak Rebels. Well, yes. They won 27-14 at the home of the Rebels. The Bulls, they also had a guy sent off over the weekend. Again, you know, this whole tackle rule around the head. You can't hit anyone in the neck or head area. So Botman got sent off. He got a 4-week suspension as well. And the Bulls eventually beating the Sunwolves 34-21. The Hurricanes, well, what a good side they are. And also Highlanders have gone backwards under Tony Brown. So the Hurricanes won that one 41-15. Waratahs, well, they're in under serious, serious pressure here. On paper, this should be the best Aussie team, but they got clapped twice in SA. And then they got home and the Brumbies gave them another serious dose of the back of the hand. 28-12, the Brumbies winning that one. And then one of the big surprises of the weekend, a slightly weakened Experimental Sharks team. Well, they eventually beat the Kings 19-17, which is kind of embarrassing. In one of the worst rugby games I think anyone has seen in quite some time. In the English Premier League over the weekend, well, Arsenal, they lost again, didn't they? This time leading to West Brom. It's really, really embarrassing. The average teams, as some of their fans are saying, are beating them by 3 goals. And then the good teams are beating them by 5 goals. So more woes for Arsenal. They slipped onto 6th now on the log. 6th. Yeah, 6th. West Ham, they lost to Leicester. Shakespeare's doing wonders there for Leicester. They just keep winning, which is really, really good for them. Chelsea maintain their 10-point win. Sorry, 10-point lead in the standings with a 2-1 victory over Stoke City. Everton looking strong, 4-0 after Hull. They could actually really take over from where Arsenal have been for quite some time. Man United, they beat Middlesbrough 3-1. Tottenham Hotspur, even without Harry Kane, they beat Southampton 2-1. And then Man City drew Liverpool 1-1. Local PSL action, some pretty boring draws. IS Cape Town 2-2 with Free State Stars. Bloem Celtic 0-0 with Cape Town City, who go on top despite losing points there. Baroka FC 2-2 with Kaizer Chiefs. And Highlands Park, they finally won a game. They beat Maritzburg United. Now, last Friday, there was the draw for the Champions League, which means that Juventus will now take on Barcelona 11th of April. It's the quarterfinals, of course. Dortmund will take on Monaco 11th of April. Atletico, they get Leicester 12th April. Same night, we'll get Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid, which is the most common of all playoff matches. I think it's the 11th time these two teams are going head-to-head here. In cricket, New Zealand, well, they got absolutely rolled by SA. SA were 94 for 6 at one stage, but they still managed to win by 8 wickets within 3 days. So good on the Proteas there. Maharaj, very impressive with the ball. And Quinton de Kock and Temba Bavuma with the bats saving the Proteas early on. So very dominant performance there. Onto the third test, and the Proteas now leading 1-0. Australia with their backs against the wall against India. India finally coming good there, despite the fact that Virat Kohli is still having a real shit season. Sorry, series. So Australia, you know, they really felt the Indians were there for the taking, but then Pujara scored a double hundred, and now Australia are batting with a deficit I think it's, yeah, went to day 5 already of that one. In golf, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Obviously, everyone was very emotional on the fact this was the first time that the king was not there in person. He passed away last year. And Mark Leishman, he was the winner there. So Mark Leishman, who himself had some real sadness recently. His wife was in a coma for a while.
Right.
But thankfully, she did not die. And she was still with him to see him with this amazing win, which is anything pre-Masters is really good. You want to take as much form as possible into the first major of the year, which starts in 2 weeks' time. Bloody exciting, that. More sport today on The Bounce Show, 10 a.m. here on Cliff Central. I've got a very good rant, which I'm pretty sure you'd like to hear. It's about rugby, sharing opinions, and how bloody stupid some people are and continue to be.
Did you see that I brought in newspapers today? I see Anthea is gobbling them up. It's the amazing business day and everything. Yeah, I decided to bring newspapers in. It was kind of a, you know, something nostalgic and curious from a bygone era. Nobody looks at newspapers anymore. So I thought, well, what the hell? Let me see if they still exist. And lo and behold, they're in the shop, tucked away in a corner, only a few copies of each.
I just thought that you were bringing Carl to work and needed somewhere to, you know, make a
frame to take a shit. Yeah. Let's get into something important with Anthea Gardner. It's around your money and what's going on. Are you ready? How are you?
Tell me you're not tempted to burst into song.
Oh, I love this song. Are you kidding? I never get sick of it.
I would, except I have such a bad singing voice.
Well, no, you did a version once and it was very good.
Mm-hmm. So these newspapers, some interesting stuff on here. Sea Harvest shares in demand. They're raising their bid offer. Green Bay's moving to the main board. And Micro Mega Directors got fined R1 million for trading during a closed period. Mm. They're useful, these papers.
Yeah, they sometimes are. I also saw an interesting story here about Mark Barnes. I think
He's applying for the banking license in 2 months'
time. That's right,
time.
So they can lend people money via the post office.
But that was always the plan, right? To turn the post office into a bank. They've got such good footprint. It's the only way to go, really.
Big infrastructure. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk quickly about some of the things that I need to catch up on. First of all, Friday was great, wasn't it?
From a volume, yes. Thursday was incredible from a returns point of view. We got over 2% from the market. Big volumes, 4.4 billion rand on Thursday, $4.4, $2.3 billion on Friday. And then if you include Wednesday, in 3 days, $100 billion traded.
Jeez, okay.
Isn't that amazing? That's in huge. South Africa, on the South African Stock Exchange, in 3 days, R100 billion. That's a lot of noughts, a lot of zeros.
Who were the big winners?
Okay. On Thursday, it was almost every stock. On Friday, it was slightly different because we had a rebalance of the index, so a quarterly...
What does this mean? Does this mean people are buying up stocks when they all go?
Well, they're buying and selling because...
Right. But when the volume is so huge?
So volume was huge on Thursday because it was derivatives closeout. And what they is they all have a position to that day, which they are trying to close this arbitrage gap. And so they're trying to get the last price. I mean, on Friday even, because of the index rebalance, a third of the volume traded in the auction. So a lot of it was technical and arbitrage trading rather than investment, you know, trading rather than investment. Right. So the interesting thing that happened on Friday was that Brait fell out of the top 40 index and Truworths went into it. So this is by market capitalization. And often what you find overseas or even here is that people track the index. And so they're forced to buy the shares that go into the index and sell the ones that come out. But actually, they were buying Brait anyway because it was up 1.4%. And then strangely, Truworths lost 1.2%. So that was a bit odd. And then RMI, the investment, Rand Merchant Investment Company, they entered the FTSE All World Index and the share was up 3% on Friday. So a lot of buying there, people trying to rebalance their positions, their portfolios. That's what
but
it
you
is.
You know, Brait deserved to be dropping out of there, frankly. They've really not performed.
No, not at all.
I'm looking at the chart here for 2 years of Brait. It's basically at a lower level now than it was 2 years ago, despite everything seemingly being in
well,
its
favor. Well, that was Brexit,
favor.
Right?
Yeah, sure.
That
but
was
I mean,
the issue.
You know,
and people not figuring out where to go from here, I think.
Yeah, it was absolutely mostly Brexit, but I'm so disappointed in that share. It really
too.
Hasn't delivered.
I am actually as well.
All right.
So we did see a bit of consolidation on Friday, global markets as well as locally. We gave back about 0.5%. For the week, we're up 2% though, so that's quite nice. And then this Rand, still trading at levels last seen 18 months ago, 12.71 to the dollar, 13.67 to the euro, and 15.78 to the pound. I mean, that is just incredible, really. And a lot of it, again, got to do with what Janet Yellen said on Wednesday night rather than us specifically. And then, of course, resources commodity are higher on the back of higher commodity prices. So just all things moving quite strangely, but in an interesting way. And then Remgro was down almost 4% on Friday. They put out a very disappointing interim result. And you know, Remgro really is just an investment holding company. And I think about 80% of the share is made up of underlying listed shares. So like Mediclinic, Brait. Oh, I don't know if they still hold Brait. And that sort of thing. So they put out headline earnings per share of 26% increase. But if you exclude once-off items, then actually headline earnings per share was only up 4.3%. They're now in an intrinsic NAV, NAV, net asset value, of 257 Rand. And the share is known to trade at a discount of between 12 and 15% to NAV, just because that's what happens sometimes. It's now trading just over 16% discount. So I guess if you believe there was a narrowing of the discount, you could potentially pick up 4%, but it's actually not even worth it, really. I mean, they're sitting on a nice cash position of 12 billion Rand.
Wow.
Yeah. I think some of it's going to be used to buy SAB Miller's share in Distell. So that will be one of the things that they really, management are not really being forthcoming because we suspect that some of it will also be used to buy up Spire Healthcare in the UK, which Mediclinic already owns some of. What management have said is that they are holding the money for value-enhancing transactions, which you kind of almost have to believe because that's what they do. They're investors, right?
All right.
They're going to do that. It reminds me, though, I don't know why, I put the two companies
who are
together.
Who are the people at Remgro? I mean,
this is the company that was started by Rupert,
right,
by the Ruperts in the 1940s. They started that tobacco company, Brand or Four Brand.
British American Tobacco.
And then they rolled it out to British American Tobacco. They started Venfin. It's a whole...
So do they still own a lot of these shares?
I don't know who the absolute holdings of Remgro are, unfortunately. Sorry.
But I'm sure they would be, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, they'd be. I just don't know how much. They're for sure.
Okay.
I don't know
and
how much.
And then what is, Reinet then? Reinet. Yeah,
also an investment holding company, but that's the problem with these companies. They're all kind of spun out of each other into separate listed holding companies. What was the other one? Venfin. That was another one that was out of it. And I can't remember if Venfin stood for venture financing or something.
Wow.
Okay. No, it's a very convoluted structure. And if you look at it carefully, I suspect you'll find that most of it is held by three or four people.
Okay.
It, you know what else this reminds me of is Richemont. And I saw over the weekend that Richemont launched their first smartwatch. Their first Mont Blanc smartwatch called Summit. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because that's not the sector that Richemont plays in. You know, they're luxury brands, they're heritage pieces. So it's interesting to see them going into it. I can't believe that they'll get that many sold. Who would buy a fancy smart watch? Like, well, first of all, they have leather. Oh,
you'd be surprised.
Really?
Same people who would buy one of those pens that costs 55,000 rand.
But those pens are like heritage value. They're luxury pieces. Like, so the smartwatch
has... This would be the luxury smartwatch.
It has a leather strap. Like, who trains with a leather strap? I don't get it. Anyway. Ben looks like he wants to tell us something.
No, I don't know. I saw an interview with Han Rupert saying that obviously, you know, the timepiece has been something forever and ever, but people want to live for the now nowadays. And he is quite visionary in that I think at some stage he was involved in bringing Apple products into the country as well. So he's got a good understanding about trends, innovations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's not a massive surprise to me that this would be an option.
That Mont Blanc now has the smartwatch.
Yeah.
Summit.
Now, you were asked a question last week about African Phoenix. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes. So if you remember, African Phoenix is African Bank that was spun out, delisted, restructured, separated into the good and the bad bank. Mm-hmm. African Phoenix has come back to the market. They came back in February. Not as a bank, though, as an investment company. And when African Bank delisted, they delisted at 31 cents. And they relisted, the share shot up to 54 cents. I think it's even trading above 60 cents now. And the problem with it was that their pref, because they didn't list as a bank, their pref shares had an issue. So if you had these pref shares, you're probably up in arms because they used to be cumulative. Now they're not. And so if this new company, if you like, investment company, doesn't pay a dividend, it won't be accumulated into next year, which it normally would have done in the bank prefs. Mm-hmm. So you just miss out. It has, at the last check, it had a net asset value of 31 cents a share. It was trading over 60. I don't know. It feels like a bit of a speculative share to me. I'm staying away from it. If you own shares in it and it's, you know, kind of, you don't need the money, then why not? You can hold them and hopefully they'll go higher. There's no real reason for it to go higher. There's no real reason. They haven't given us anything. You know, with Remgro and Richemont, we know what the investment thesis is. But with African Phoenix, we don't.
We don't have any idea yet.
No,
just hold tight. Don't go there if you don't have to. Okay, and then there was a $2.8 billion loss in Valiant Pharma.
Oh, yes.
What's this all about?
This is a guy called Bill Ackman. He's what you call an activist shareholder in the U.S.
All right.
He runs a fund, hedge fund called Pershing Square, which is absolutely huge. He bought into Valiant in 2014, paid $196 a share. Last week, sold it at $11 a share, thereby crystallizing a $2.8 billion loss. I mean, the only thing bigger.
So why would he do that? Is that just being destructive?
No. So he doesn't believe in the story anymore. He took a board seat at all drama. This is how he plays. I mean, the only thing bigger than his hedge fund is his ego. And he's that guy, you know, like he goes out there, buys huge stakes in companies, takes a seat on the board, turns it around. I mean, this is also not his first loss that he's had, but it is a big story because he's such a big hedge fund manager. That's what it is. I mean, he was the guy who basically called Herbalife a Ponzi scheme. He's that kind of guy. Right,
yeah,
yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then lastly, I guess we had two accelerated book builds last week as well. One, both in the property sector. One was Mass Property. They raised 1.7 billion rand. And then a company called Green Bay Property. They're Mauritius based, but they brought in a local our local property company, Resilient, to buy two malls in Portugal. It really looks like a good idea, though. The anchor tenants for these malls are the Inditex brand, so Massimo Dutti, Zara, Stradivarius. And they raised 2 billion rand. So there's definitely money still in the stock market, or money to be invested in the stock market. Like all these big deals going through, you know, we just read about Sea Harvest upping their capital raise as well.
All right, Anthea, that's a lot to chew on for this morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
We will see you tomorrow morning.
No, you won't. I'm on holiday tomorrow.
Sorry, tomorrow's a holiday for all of us. Sorry, Wednesday morning.
Indeed.
When we try to get the economy going again on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
What do these public holidays do to the stock market?
Well, they just close.
So nothing happens.
No.
Just goes dead. All right, there we go. Anthea Gardner, a look at your money. It is Monday morning. We'll take your calls, Cliff Central, one word on Skype, your messages on Twitter, on WeChat, and on WhatsApp. CliffCentral.com.